Welcome to How to Love Forever.
In this episode, we share our impressions of an article by a 40-year relationship counselor and clinical psychologist.
We explore the most common forms of relationship dysfunction.
We learn how common relationship dysfunction actually is.
We establish the difference between dysfunction and abuse.
We banter on about going to Mars versus going to the beach.
We disclose how relationships are a lot like video games.
And we go gaga over each other's big, giant words.
All this and more coming up. Right now.
Hi, I'm Marco.
And I'm Heather.
We invite you on a journey of discovery as we explore techniques, tools, and inspiration to better our love lives and our sex lives.
Join us as we travel the world, seeking out the stories that can help improve how we do romance and relationships.
Come with us as we discover
how to love forever.
Hi, love bugs.
Hey, love bugs. Welcome to today's episode of How to Love Forever, the podcast that focuses on love, relationships, and sexual health. My name is Heather.
And I am Marco.
In today's episode, we are discussing dysfunction.
Yeah, relationship dysfunctions and how to tell if you might be in a dysfunctional relationship.
Not just how to tell, but maybe some ways to avoid dysfunction and make our relationships healthier.
It's a fascinating topic to me because, as we had mentioned in the first episode about how we did live through extremely dysfunctional situations in our lives. And so you've got to be able to spot it before you can avoid it.
Absolutely. And you only do that through practice and awareness. So these are really great things to keep in mind and hopefully apply in your own healthy and awesome relationships.
Absolutely. It's really very fascinating. And let's get into it, shall we?
Let's do it.
I came across this article when I was researching for this particular episode. And this is an article from Dr. Randy Gunther, PhD, from a Psychology Today issue a little bit back. It's from the Rediscovering Love issue. And I guess the thing that struck me the most about Dr. Randy Gunther's article is that she asserts that dysfunction exists in every relationship. It's only the level of how much there is that changes. And the more dysfunction there is in your relationship, the more you should be looking at your relationship with a focus on ridding yourself of dysfunctional patterns. But it's there in everyone because we're all just imperfect little monkeys stumbling around trying not to hurt each other.
Absolutely. None of us are perfect. And obviously, it's great if we can be the best versions of ourselves. But even when we're being the best versions of ourselves, we're going to make mistakes. Things happen. But it's recognizing when there are unhealthy patterns and how to mitigate them, how to stop them in their tracks and create healthy ones.
Exactly. And that is a good thing to remember, that you're not alone in these experiences, that everyone can relate. Everyone has a certain amount of dysfunction in their relationship. And that needing help is not something to feel shame about. It's only human to be in this situation.
Absolutely. And by collaborating and working together, reaching out for help, then we can continue to be the best versions of ourselves possible.
Yes. Now, in our research for this particular episode, we also came across a good distinction between what is dysfunctional versus what is abusive. And I want to address that right now because honestly, you know, to be in an abusive relationship is a very serious thing and you need help immediately. And we will be addressing abusive relationships and how to get help about that in a future episode. We've got a fantastic interview with an incredible guest that is going to cover a lot of things with greater authority than I can stammer about right now.
It's a really fantastic conversation that we shared with her, and we feel you guys are going to get a lot out of it. But today, we are simply talking about dysfunction, which is not necessarily the same as abuse.
Yeah. In a nutshell, the difference being that an abusive relationship is when a power and control factor is present, and that one person is using elements of dysfunction to willfully dominate another person. That's abuse.
Yes.
So we'll be talking about that, like I said, in a couple of episodes. But for now, let's just take care of the dysfunction side. Let's break down these signs that you might be in a dysfunctional relationship. There are a few key clues to point to the fact that you may be in a dysfunctional relationship. And one of the big red flags is winner or loser arguments. Winner or loser arguments are basically just arguing for who's right instead of trying to fix what's wrong, in a nutshell. All relationships experience disagreements, right? It comes with being two humans sharing a life together. We're going to bump into each other sometimes in annoying ways. But there's a difference between constructive debate and a destructive argument. So whenever there's a difference of opinion or a conflict arises, we really should be careful not to fall into arguing for the sake of being right, because that's 100% ego. And that can bring like unnecessary friction into a relationship. A better relationship strategy is when you encounter a disagreement, you approach it with a focus on resolving conflict instead of getting your way. Because if you won, quote unquote, or they won, quote unquote, and that's like the one thing you care about, it's the final score, then that disagreement was probably not resolved. Instead, a hierarchy was reinforced. One side lost, and they'll probably retreat emotionally. They won't be available to you, while the other side, your side, whatever, gloats in victory. And guess what? That wasn't really an actual winning or losing situation, because the problem the disagreement came from is not fully dealt with. That's not a balanced relationship. That's a power-tripped relationship, and that is dysfunctional.
It is fully dysfunctional, and you make a lot of really good points. It's something that I think a lot of us do when we are less mature and maybe have less experience in dealing with conflicts in a very thoughtful and calm fashion. Instead, it's, you know, if you win, then I lose, so I have to win. And it's completely, you know who loses in that sort of situation? Everyone.
Yeah.
You both lose, because the point is the relationship. So if it's me versus you, then the relationship is the one who takes a toll.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
So another one, and this kind of dovetails with that, is assignment of blame. It's like, oh no, something happened. Whose fault is it? So how constructive is that? Right? I'm sure most of us are familiar with the pattern, some sort of malfunction within the relationship dynamic. And like a young kid who got caught breaking a lamp by accident, we immediately attempt to deflect the blame onto somebody else.
Yeah.
Right? But if we want to interrupt these destructive patterns, what can we do instead? Perhaps we could take a step back, assess where the glitch occurred, and figure out what we did or did not do that led to the sequence of events. Remember, we're in this together. Most people, when we have issues within a relationship, it's not one person did something or another person didn't do something. It's usually a combination of two people or more who missed a step, who weren't paying attention. We both got to the same place for some reason. So, but then the fun part is finding a way to communicate that with our partner or partners, share with them how what they did or did not do made us feel, and then work together to find a way to avoid that sort of thing occurring again.
Right.
Right?
That makes sense.
I look at it kind of like playing a video game, right?
How so?
So as we go through the various levels of a video game, we're presented with challenges that we could sail right through. Things are easy and we like move right on. However, as things get more intense and we level up, we could get completely walloped and we have to restart the level.
Walloped. You said walloped.
That's a good word.
That's really cute. She said walloped, everybody.
I was totally thinking like Mario Brothers, you know, with like Smash. Anyway, once we get walloped, then we have to assess what went wrong. And then we try to figure out how we might be able to do it better. And we try it again.
Yeah.
But we get to do it with our best friend.
I like that.
Right?
Yeah, totally. It's like playing a video game together. It's like, yeah, okay, we're going to level up. So we're going to lose a few lives here and there, so to speak, you know, in the game, obviously, not in real life, because that would just be terrible.
Well, then nobody wins.
Yeah, nobody wins. Nobody wins, because you don't get three lives. You just get the one, okay? But yeah, no, I get it. It's like exploring the different levels, and each time that you mess up, you've learned a new thing, and then you come back not messing up that. And then you get a few feet further up the, you know, in the tunnel or, you know, through the cavern or whatever. And then you mess up some more. And then once you begin to get a greater feel for the relationship, you know, and begin to play the game more adroitly.
Adroitly. Wow. That's another good word. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You turn me on with those big words of yours.
I got big words.
Oh, baby.
Big dangly words.
But yeah, and that's, I think what it comes down to is like, are we in this together? You know? So if we're in it together, then we can't just assign blame We can't be me versus you. We're on the same team.
Right. So Dr. Gunther, she wrote one that kind of threw me for a loop. I kind of didn't know what she meant a little bit. So she talked about snapshots versus moving pictures. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if this is a guys and girls are different in this way kind of argument that she's making. I feel that there's a general applicability to it, however. Obviously, everybody's different and your mileage may vary. This is the 21st century and there are all kinds of relationship structures with all kinds of people who self-identify with different like psychological slash gender roles, etc. But traditionally speaking, there's a difference she cites in male versus female psychology regarding time and its relevance to relationships, right? Mm-hmm. Men are more prone to live in the moment when it comes to their relationship psychology, whereas women are more likely to be long-term players, for example.
Okay.
Meaning like, you know, the guy is stuck in the moment with his girl, you know, and the girl's like already thinking about like marriage and children and stuff like that.
Yeah, I could see that.
So these are differences that can be leveraged for power in a dysfunctional way. Often one member could bring up choices about like the past or the future to the point of harassment, like when you're in a relationship with someone who just keeps bringing up something you screwed up in like a couple of years ago and just won't let it go, for example, or somebody that's always harassing you, for example, for like, you know, taking the next step in your relationship. Say, for example, it's like, you know, you hate me because you haven't put a ring on it, that kind of situation.
Mm. That does seem kind of like a guy's perspective on a female's need for security.
Well, again, this is her point of view and how there is like this traditional difference in the way that time is perceived and applied in relationships vis-a-vis men or women.
Okay.
So the reverse can also be true, though, where like the coercion to live in the moment and not think about what was done in the past can occur. You know, say, for example, hey, baby, you know, that was the past. I can change. You know, so it's all this kind of, it's how you deal with elements of time. Again, her argument is men think in the moment, women think in the future or the past, etc. And I didn't find it particularly convincing in exactly the same way that she wrote it, but I'll leave it up to our listeners to look up the article, which we're going to cite the link for later on, and it'll be in the show notes.
Yeah.
But for me, I felt like it was a bit of a reach, especially given like how much balkanization there is nowadays in like the versatility and diversity of relationship styles and psychological styles between people, you know, especially the younger and younger you are. So maybe she's just speaking from like her own generational experience.
Yeah, it could be. And I do see that there's a tendency, again,
tendency
for women to have a longer term perspective, you know, going back and in the future. Whereas guys, yeah, can be more like, we're here now. Let's deal with the here and now, which is, they're both important.
And it might be flat out biological, and I might be trying to be too PC about it.
So what I'm trying to understand, though, snapshots versus moving pictures, according to Dr. Gunther, how can it be dysfunctional? Is it just how much people fixate on something and not connect with each other to understand where the other person's coming from?
I might be putting words into her mouth at this point because I ended up just extrapolating from this particular element of the article where I didn't quite understand it with my own intuition or my own sense of logic, I guess. But the way I see it is that, yes, there are these two differences in psychology between being in the moment or living in the past or the future, taking those things into account. But when a harmonic balance cannot be struck between what has happened in the past and what you're living now, or a harmonic balance cannot be struck between what you're living now and your prospects for the future, you may want to search the situation for signs of further dysfunction. If somebody's always holding the past over you, for example.
Sure, yeah.
Or if somebody's always demanding some type of commitment into the far future that you don't want, for example. I mean, the dysfunction is there. It may not be that either side is particularly dysfunctional. It's that the dysfunction occurs in the fact that both of you aren't in agreement.
Right. You're not on the same page and you may not want the same things long term.
It's a core thing. It's a core disagreement that you've got to work out.
Okay. So she also wrote here about threats of exile and abandonment. I don't know about you, but this one is such a trigger for me.
It sounds icky.
Yeah, it's really messed up. You know, a lot of us have fear of abandonment when coming from childhood, you know, whatever insecurity, losing the one who is there to give you love and sustenance and all that. Mm-hmm. And when our romantic partner threatens us, whether it's out of anger or frustration, they could say something like, I just don't want to deal with you. You need to get the hell out of here and leave me alone, or I'm leaving. I'm done with this. I mean, my ex did that all the time. He's like, I'm fucking out of here. Sorry for the cursing.
Fucking all right.
Or he would lock me out of the house. But again, that veered into abuse because it was a power struggle. He was having power over me. But it's really ugly to threaten the person that you love with abandonment or exile.
Yeah.
According to Dr. Gunther, and this is a direct quote, more men than women fear exile and more women than men fear abandonment. Both are the reciprocals of each other, and neither is ever a healthy way to resolve differences. If you ever use those phrases, make sure you mean them, because someday your partner may take you seriously.
Youch.
Exactly. So all these little cuts, if we are with somebody, it is because we love them. If we love somebody, why would we want to intentionally cause harm? I don't know if you're familiar. Well, I know Marco's familiar, but I don't know about how many of you are familiar with the four agreements. I'm definitely going to do an episode on that.
We totally have to.
Yeah, because being impeccable with our words, that is something that I use every day.
It is such an important part of a working relationship, is to be impeccable with your words, is to say what you mean so that you can mean what you say, mm-hmm. all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. If we can live with integrity and we can share what is important to us without doing it in a way that is attacking the person that we're sharing it with, then our message is going to come across so much more clearly. If somebody is feeling that they are being attacked, are they open to hearing what we have to say?
Of course not.
Of course not, no. Because they're in a defensive mode.
Yeah, they're in shield mode. They're like the dudes in the 300 that went all turtle shield, you know?
Right?
Yeah. You're not going to be able to get through that.
You got to protect yourself. If somebody is trying to hurt you, then you got to put up your shield. And if you have your shield, then you're not exactly in a reciprocal, healthy relationship.
Probably not. Probably if you've got not. Your guard up, you can't be intimate.
Yeah. So again, don't threaten your loved one with exile or abandonment unless you truly mean it. And if you truly mean it, you probably shouldn't be in a relationship with them.
Honestly, yeah. Mm-hmm. I can 100% agree with that.
Yeah. What do you have next for us, Marco?
Farther down the list, there was this one that really struck me because I think I've been stung by this myself. It's disloyalty. This is another dysfunction. Dysfunction can take the form of disloyalty. And what do we mean by disloyalty is this sort of breach of trust that happens in, let me cite an example. Like most of us have a deep friend that we can entrust with our feelings and concerns, you know, and it's very healthy to have a friend like that.
Absolutely.
Obviously, you've got one. Mm-hmm. I've got a couple. You have several. But that confidence can be weaponized.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
This happens when one starts to use their friend, not just as a personal confidant regarding their own feelings and thoughts, but kind of a recipient of private information that friend doesn't necessarily have a right to know.
Ooh,
about your relationship or your partner, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
A person becomes disloyal when that private information is shared in order to make their partner seem inferior, for example, or like at fault or intrinsically bad to their confidant, you know, without giving the partner the right to argue their own side. You know, they might not be there. You know, it's like when you get mad, you know, not you, but, you know, the theoretical you. It's like if a person gets mad and runs off to their best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And just starts dumping. And some of these things that they start dumping might be actually quite harmful to the relationship to let them out, or they could be harmful for the person that's not there.
How so?
Well, okay. Look, when this happens, a lot of times it's done to manipulate the confidant's view of the situation, which is itself a separate act of disloyalty. And it's therefore an example, a separate example of relationship dysfunction. Destructive triangles is what she called it. And they're a very common way for people to sabotage several relationships in one move, usually just to make themselves seem faultless in a relationship.
Oh, yeah. I am familiar with this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One goes off to Kvetch much to their best friend about the terrible, terrible things that their boyfriend or girlfriend just did. And before you know it, that other person is just full of information that they don't necessarily need to have and may not even be the right information, may not even be true. And it's just a matter of sort of making yourself look good in comparison to your partner and all of that. It's kind of a never-ending cycle. And again, it's good to have friends that you can lean on for advice and support during stressful times. Everybody needs them, including in times of relationship stress. The problem arises when you unfairly sell out your partner, either in an emotional fit or to purposefully manipulate others into feeling more compassion for you than for your partner, for example. You know, make them out to be the bad person.
Right. It's your poisonous propaganda.
Right. And it gets even worse if your confidant is a mutual friend. Yay, congratulations. You just probably screwed up either their friendship with your partner or your relationship with your confidant. Because these triangles of disloyalty, they always leave people wondering who they can trust.
Mm-hmm.
And once that trust is gone, it's usually gone forever.
Yeah, it's such a shame, too. It's so unnecessary to employ that kind of behavior, and it ruins so many relationships of all kinds.
It's a bunch of poo-poo.
Total poo-poo. Some more poo-poo are grudges.
Oh, yeah, grudges are poo-poo.
You familiar with the grudges?
I was raised Catholic.
So grudges, this one is... You know how you didn't really connect with the snapshot moving pictures one?
Yeah.
I understand where grudges come from and why they are so common. I'm not one to really hold on to it because I just feel like it's such a waste of my energy. But grudges are essentially when small frustrations aren't expressed and mitigated. And then if they aren't addressed at all, they can grow into this all-consuming downward spirals of resentment. So it's like this festering, simmering thing inside. You know, if Marco didn't get the groceries from the car and then a week later he didn't help with this other tiny little thing. And if I didn't address and say, hey, could you please help me when I'm coming back from XYZ, and then he has the opportunity to help. But if I don't address it, he doesn't know.
No. And that's something that you just end up internalizing into, I guess you could call a Rolodex of grievances.
Mm-hmm.
And that Rolodex, I just totally dated myself.
Isn't that still a term?
I think it's an app now. But anyway, this Rolodex of grievances just grows and grows and grows. And it's stuff that can be like from like 10, 15, 20 years back or something. Like, and it's easy to, because what you're trying to do, I think, in this kind of situation is avoid immediate conflict by not bringing something up. But then you're also not letting it air out. You're not letting it go.
Yeah, it's cleaning out a wound. If you just let it stay dirty and you don't wash it, it's just going to get worse and worse. And it could be something incredibly simple, but it is up to you to find ways to communicate that. Here's another quote by Dr. Randy Gunther. She says, people who harbor grudges usually do so across the board.
Like with roller skates?
Too. They often feel victimized by others, bitter about unfair losses, and resentful of actual or exaggerated injustices.
So not like roller skates.
Hurt you. When confronted by their partners, they usually will not reveal the depth of their resentment, but act it out in indirect ways or bring up a slew of past affronts in the middle of an argument.
Ah, that's that Rolodex I was talking
about.
That's
that Rolodex. So you need to address it. For example, Marco's perfect, but
I am so perfect.
Hypothetically, if Marco did something to irk me, I wouldn't necessarily blurt it out right away. I like to really kind of sit on it, ponder, ascertain if I'm just being overly sensitive or if there's a pattern that needs to be addressed. And then I try to find a time where neither of us is super distracted or busy or in like a super grumpy space. Although, you know,
it is me we're talking about. So that those times are few and far between.
I'm all about the timing. Yeah. And I say, hey, babe, can I talk to you about something? And then we go from there.
And of course, when I hear those words, I'm on my side of things, like mentally stealing myself. Oh my God, what did I do wrong this time? Oh no, panic.
And then is it terrible for you?
No, it's not, because you usually come at it with an eye toward conflict resolution and reestablishment of harmony, as we were talking about before with the winner or loser arguments. That's how these strategies sort of weave together in order to create a tapestry of protection against dysfunction, is that when you see one kind of dysfunction, it's usually woven with another kind of dysfunction. function. And so when you get an opportunity to develop a grudge, for example, you also have an opportunity to not develop a grudge, but instead have a conversation. But you also have an opportunity to have an argument.
And then who's going to win the argument?
Exactly. And who's going to win the argument and who's going to be right and who's going to be wrong? And of course, as we said earlier, it doesn't get resolved because instead an ego hierarchy gets established, which is different than getting rid of the problem.
Absolutely. And focusing on your relationship as a partnership as opposed to a hierarchical zero-sum game.
You just have such great words.
You like my words, don't you?
You got big words.
Yeah. I like to throw my big words around.
Big bouncy words. I like it. So she also talked about boundary violations, and that one really got me too. Boundaries, that was a good one for me, probably because of my upbringing. Mm-hmm. The boundaries are a necessary element in every healthy person. We all know this. You know, there are aspects of your life that are just for you. They can be like your existential fears and insecurities. They can be your vulnerabilities, your hopes and dreams, your self-image, your personal history, your PIN number from your bank account, like literally anything.
Yeah.
Whatever you choose to keep just to yourself, you're going to choose to keep it to yourself, and that's within your privacy boundaries. So, you know, pretty much anything you choose to protect as exclusively your own can be put in the realm of these boundaries. I'm calling it intimate capital. That's not from the article. That's just the way I ended up calling it. It's intimate capital.
Yeah, I like that.
Because as children, we are conditioned to treat our boundaries in certain ways. Controlling parents that feel their children have no right to privacy, for example, they're usually training their children to give up their rights and agency in times of conflict.
Mm-hmm.
They are conditioning their children to allow their boundaries to be easily violated.
And violated they will be forever and ever until they figure out how to stop it.
Yeah, that's lame, parents. Don't be lame, parents.
Don't be lame.
Number one rule of parenting, don't be lame. So when you're in a dysfunctional relationship, this is another point that can be leveraged against you. Your partner, or maybe even both of you, feel zero conflict about entering each other's private world without permission. Somebody looking through your telephone pictures, for example, or your messages, or that whole what's yours is mine kind of mentality.
That's not healthy.
Mm-mm. And that applies to material possessions as well as private thoughts, private plans, or even your private wishes and dreams. And once your sketchy partner has access to these contents within your boundaries, those things can be used against you in all kinds of ways. I mean, imagine them gaining control of your finances or having some sort of shameful past experience that can leverage against you.
No, absolutely. I see examples of that throughout my friendships, relationships over the years.
It can happen. Mm-hmm. So conversely, you as the aggressed upon partner can also exhibit dysfunction by doing the thing I said before, by reflexively giving up too much of what you hold dear inside your own private world. It's a sign of emotional desperation, you know, seeking connectedness with your partner without care for the consequences.
Uh-huh,
you know, giving too much of yourself, basically.
Yep.
So, like, neither forcing nor granting of boundary violations is healthy.
Nope.
You can't, like, want to own somebody else's private world, and you shouldn't be giving up your private world.
Absolutely.
And early on in a relationship, there's going to be a lot of natural, like, intimate capital shared between the two new partners. This is very sweet. It is. It's very, and it's a way to establish the strength and depth of your relationship when it's first getting started. And it shouldn't be confused for abuse of personal boundaries. You share what you want to share, so long as your partner consents to have it shared with them. But oversharing can not only kill the mystery and magic we so enjoy about a new love partner, it really also signals we may have weak personal boundaries. This can either scare a partner away, or it can prompt a more unscrupulous kind of partner to use this intimate capital against you, like you said, in some unbalanced power dynamic.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that's the beginning of abuse.
Yeah, it's no bueno.
Es ist nicht gut. What else is on that list?
Well, going along to the whole power balance thing, there is the dysfunction of dominance and submission. Now, we're not talking about...
Not the kink, the dysfunction.
Not the kink where there are agreements and open communication and safe words and all that stuff, but the dysfunction. Do you hold the power in your relationship? Does your partner? If somebody holds the ultimate power over the other in your relationship, it is a sure sign it is a dysfunctional dynamic.
Mm.
It's not good for either of you. And for example, in my dysfunctional relationship, my ex was the dominant one.
Youch.
Yep. It was not fun, man. Everything had to be approved by him, from the groceries I purchased to how I spent my time with or without him to who I spent my time with, all those stupid things. And any perceived failure on my part subjected me to being berated, insulted, and sometimes threatened with exile.
There goes those dysfunctions weaving themselves together again.
And in return, I became incredibly passive aggressive. I was full of simmering resentment because I couldn't approach him with any of the issues that I would like to have resolved in a healthy manner. No, everything that happened, I had to keep buried, and I became very adept at lying.
Ouch.
Yeah. Well, if I didn't, I just got in trouble.
Yeah, no, it's a self-protection mechanism, but yeah, just having to do that is lame.
That's super lame. So how to avoid this sort of dynamic?
Yeah, how do you avoid that?
Communication and boundaries, man. Communication and boundaries. You got to know who you are, what's important to you, where your strengths lie, and that will allow you to share that with your partner and find a balance together. As Marco and I have stated, we are imperfect creatures.
Well, speak for yourself.
Marco and I are imperfect creatures.
Okay, fine. I'll give you that one.
And we embrace the fact that we will never be as perfect as we would like, but we do know the value that we each bring to our partnership, and we celebrate each other's accomplishments and contributions. We are in this together. Neither one of us has power over the other. We are our own strong individuals, and we choose to do a collaboration together.
That's pretty much how we live our life. Yeah, it's a collaborative experience, power balanced. There may be moments when one of us is carrying a little bit more weight than the other, but
sure.
That's just life circumstance and rising to the need of the moment.
Absolutely. And you got to find out what works for you. There's a balance within each, every couple, throuple, etc., where you find a healthy balance that everybody is getting what they need and their desires are met.
And that may actually look like a submission and domination kind of setup. But so long as you're going into it
conscientiously
and with the truth of your personality in there, if it's a thing that actually makes sense for you and that is positive for you in your life, then great.
Absolutely.
But if it's a thing you've been tricked into, however, or if it's something that's born of like dysfunctions that were learned in earlier life, things like that, that's something to look at for sure. You were talking about domination and submission, and like earlier you were talking about the threat of exile and abandonment. It just made me think about this other one, which is the fear of loss that she talks about.
Okay.
How can I explain this? We all come to feel invested, connected, interdependent with our partnerships and our relationships, right? That's healthy. That's as it should be, because otherwise you wouldn't be together. You wouldn't be connected.
It's
you're just two ships.
It's all about the connection.
Yeah. Otherwise you're just two ships in the night. Attachment is different, however, in the psychological sense, like the psychological definition of attachment, it's more like an anxiety of abandonment that you might get when a relationship is threatened. It makes you feel like a panicking kid alone in a parking lot. From what I can tell, that is attachment, according to psychologists, and it isn't a healthy thing.
Okay.
So I just wanted to make that differentiation right now, because at like a street slang kind of level, yeah, I feel very attached to our relationship. I feel very attached to you. And I feel that that's a very healthy thing. But what I mean by that is that I feel a personal investment, a personal connection. I feel interdependent with you. I feel like positively entwined in our relationship. But yeah, if I was talking to a psychologist, attachment would be bad. Attachment brings that anticipatory sense of loss, right? And all the emotions that come with it. And if you feel threatened like that, you start to panic and you start to struggle, you know, and you're like a drowning person trying to hold on to your relationship for dear life. That type of panic can have the wrong effect. Ultimately, it can drive away your partner even farther from your arms, you know? If you are experiencing that kind of attachment panic over losing the relationship, your partner then has to take on the role of like emotional soothing, reassuring you back to a calm state, all of that. This can be exhausting.
Yeah.
To your partner.
Sounding, yes, it is.
And it can make them honestly think twice about remaining in a relationship with you.
So the thing you fear the most is the thing you're bringing in to be?
It's totally, yeah. It's the opposite of what you wanted. That's what you're achieving. So conversely, also if your partner is an scrupulous schmuck, they may find leverage against you in that fear of loss and learn how to manipulate you emotionally through it.
Using your triggers to maintain control and power over you.
Exactly. Either way, being a slave to one's fear of loss brings no desirable end. Obviously, it's a lose-lose situation, being a slave to your fear.
That's no fun. So it sounds as though it's important for us to maintain ownership of our emotions and not allowing any person to manipulate us unduly and owning our emotional landscape.
Yeah.
So this leads me to the final symptom that Dr. Gunther mentions, and that one is called ownership of emotional control. So it harkens right back, you know, it goes with the entire landscape of dysfunction and power dominance, where it's a one-way street for emotional validation in a relationship, and it's only the primary person whose desires and needs matter. In a healthy and functional relationship, it is a matter of course that each partner, emphasis on partner, has equal value, which means their dreams and goals need to be acknowledged and supported equally.
Mm.
Right? Mm-hmm. So you have goals. I love you. I want to help you achieve those goals.
Yeah. And I want to grow potatoes on Mars.
I will help you achieve that. We'll see if I'm there, because it is not necessarily my dream. But
you're
more
of a beach girl.
I am more of a beach girl. I mean, I don't think they even have sand, do they?
It's not technically. Like it's technically not sand.
Okay. Yeah. Or water.
It's okay. We'll hang out on the beach instead.
But again, I want you to achieve your dreams. So one of the things that Dr. Gunther mentioned is that if your partner has goals or dreams that they want, that they need to achieve, you need to support them, even if it means achieving them without you, which obviously it's terrible and it will be very sad to stay behind while they go off chasing those said dreams. But if you love them, don't you want them to be happy and find fulfillment in their life?
If you love somebody, set them free, that kind of thing.
Yeah, if you love someone, set them free.
If I had a burning desire to actually grow potatoes on Mars and you just wanted to hang out on the beach, there are no beaches on Mars. There is no Mars at the beach. Ergo. Incompatible futures.
Yeah. And we would say, hey, I love you and bon voyage.
And Godspeed.
Yeah, that one too. Gotta get your astrolingo on.
But it's true that each relationship is a collaborative effort, and there needs to be plenty of platform in that relationship mm-hmm. for the exploration and achieving of your goals, your dreams, your fantasies. That's honestly the highest function of any relationship, is to help realize each other's fullest potential.
I fully agree. And I feel that in relationships, we have the opportunity to achieve things that we simply can't or wouldn't be able to by ourselves. There is evidence that civilization is based on cooperation. And I know I'm kind of going on a tangent here, but in metropolitan areas, the higher the population, the amount of innovation exponentially multiplies. When you get two or more people together and you are working towards achieving a goal together, your ability to make that goal happen is so much higher than it is just by yourself.
Synergy.
It's a whole 1+1=3 thing. And it's kind of cheesy sounding, but I know in our own relationship is 100% true.
So in a sense, relationship dysfunction are any sort of blockages and glitches that prevent the smoothest operation of the relationship as a vehicle for the achievement of your greatest potential.
Yeah, I guess that's a way to look at it.
Yeah, and that's why Dr. Gunther was talking about how every relationship has a certain amount of dysfunction.
Yeah.
Because we are always dealing with the human imperfection as we strive to perfect ourselves. And a proper relationship is an excellent vehicle to perfect ourselves, and sometimes by process of elimination, because stuff is going to come up that we have to address.
Mm-hmm.
These red flags will come up from our behavior, from our partner's behavior. It will be a perfect opportunity to grow together.
Absolutely.
Or to sink in the seas of chaos and despair. Your choice.
You have your make the right choice.
Or suffer.
Well, that's it for our show today.
Wait a second. I know, right? Actually do that, yeah.
Well, that's it for our show today.
Oh my God. Okay, yeah. We're ending on that note. Here, let me lay down a link for you. It's www.psychologytoday.com, and you can go and search in their articles for the title, Is Your Relationship Dysfunctional? It's pretty good. It's a good read. It's short. It's easy, as Psychology Today tends to be. So it's very accessible to everyone. Anyway, thank you for joining us. And remember, you can reach out to us on Facebook at facebook.com/howtoloveforever and Instagram at @how2loveforever.
And if you are so full of love, you just can't stop that feeling, we would love for you to join our community on Patreon. We have a whole range of relationship levels you can choose from. And the more committed you become, the more we're able to share with you.
Yeah, we got good stuff on there.
That's right.
Theoretically, in the future, because right now we're just getting started. Now you got to be real about it. So join us next week when we go back to the more light stuff and we talk about how to establish healthy relationship patterns.
Oh, tasty, tasty.
Yeah, it's going to be a really good show. So we do look forward to sharing it with you. Until then, love deep.
Love hard.
Love forever. Bye, love bugs.